Committee on Judiciary come to order. Today is March 10th, 2009. The first item on the agenda is we're going to carry the last item on the agenda, House Bill 2169, will be carried over to Monday, March 16th. And if any other legislators that are not on the committee are carrying a bill, our council will not necessarily show up automatically. You'll need to request them to be there. There's an overflow room in room 343 if anybody doesn't have a seat and they'd like to listen to this. And away we go. We'll open the first hearing on House Bill 2803.
House Bill 2803 provides employers with a tax credit for hiring persons released from a correctional institution, requires DOC to assist with job placement for inmates, and to notify employers of the available tax incentive. We do not yet have the fiscal impact statement on this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, State Representative Kevin Cameron, House District 19, South Salem, Almsville, Turner. House Bill 2803 is one of a series of bills that pretty much is coming to us from a local group here in Marion County that has been working on reentry issues. Obviously, Marion County has a lot of people are coming out of the system into our area, and as a state as well, I have been sitting on the governor's reentry council, and some of these similar issues have been discussed at the statewide level. I want to just stress the fact that House Bill 2803 is trying to raise the level of awareness that people have made mistakes, they've paid their time, they put in their time, and they're coming out, and this, along with several other bills, of two of which we passed 60-0, by the way, thank you for your votes on the floor today, raises the level of awareness and the chances of success for people to reenter into our society and become successful, productive citizens. And I think that's the goal of what we're trying to do with corrections, is truly to make it a corrective process. And so I will allow the rest of the witnesses to testify on the bill and appreciate your time today to hear this bill.
Okay, and thank you for your effort getting these bills before us.
Yeah.
Chair. Representative Krieger.
Representative Cameron, thank you, Mr. Chair. When we did the meth 2005, just a statement, I guess, is that employment, housing, and recovery programs, and the thing we're lacking in a lot of places is mental health. Because almost every one of these people needs mental health in addition to recovery programs from drugs. And I think we need to continue to work that we've got a package that does all those things. And I realize this session with our fiscal situation as it is, it's difficult, but we need to keep in mind where we need to be going. Thank you for bringing the bill forward.
Chair, Representative, thank you. And obviously, I'm aware of the fiscal issues. Whatever we need to do to bring it to bring awareness, I think the package is important. And you just cited, you know, several of those things that people need to help be successful, and to bring resources, existing resources together is important.
Thank you. Jenna Carlson, Kimberly Elaine, and David Rogers, please.
Hey, where you been?
Chair Barker, members of the committee, I'm Janet Carlson, a Marion County Commissioner. When I was a member of this body in 2001, I had a bill that passed out of this very committee with then-Chair Max Williams on children of incarcerated parents. That was an issue that I had taken an interest in and learned a great deal actually in a research project that I was involved in as a consultant, about the intergenerational cycle of crime, the idea that we have folks who are involved in the system, that their children, for better or worse, love their parents more than being in foster care or being with relatives or being in other situations, and end up gravitating towards the family. If that family doesn't have the supports in place that it needs, oftentimes that child grows up in an atmosphere where criminality is part of the social norm, and then those children become the next generation of folks that fill our jails and prisons. We believed when we passed the bill, and it was actually a bill that created a work group for some integrated work between Department of Corrections and the counties and other state agencies, that we wouldn't see the results of that work for at least a decade. You know, child's born, takes 10 years or so before you kind of actually see the trajectory that they're going. When the report was brought back in the interim to a committee that I sat on, the Department of Corrections reported that they were actually seeing results of that program in that biennium. And the reason is because people are, their heart changes about their children. If children are part of the equation, people are more interested in going to treatment, people are more interested in being on good behavior, people are more interested in being involved in other programming that might help them turn around their lives so that they can see their children, bond with their children, be a better parent for their children. When I became a county commissioner in 2003, I took this experience and we applied for a federal grant for a Children of Incarcerated Parents Initiative, and were successful. And one of the first things we did is we actually did a survey at the Marion County Jail to find out what was the situation. And Representative Krieger, I couldn't have asked for a better segue for the remarks that I was going to make than the comments that you made. We did one in 2005 and then another in 2007, but the results were very similar in terms of the percentages, and they are at the bottom of the first page of the small report that I just handed out to you. 73% of our inmates in the Marion County Jail, and there were 442 inmates that participated, were parents. And there were 774 children from 442 inmates. 81% of mothers, 66% of fathers hadn't graduated from high school. 74% reported using methamphetamine. 89% of the mothers, out of that statistic. 67% had a job prior to incarceration, but only 35% reported having employer-paid benefits. 77% of working parents earned less than $1,500 a month prior to their incarceration. And 22% of fathers and 36% of mothers reported having no place to live after release. So the consultants that did our report concluded that there are five key factors that influence success after incarceration: education, employment, substance abuse treatment, mental health treatment, and housing. Now, one of the things that we know is that everybody politically likes to help the children, but the way that you help the children is you help the parents, and the parents are the ones who are incarcerated and coming back into the community. We started a Marion County Reentry Initiative a few years thereafter, along with our Children of Incarcerated Parents Program, which is part of that integrated system. We have a Center for Family Success. We have a transitional housing program that just opened last week. We're working on evidence-based practices. We're trying to do things where we provide wraparound services for families, and Kimberly can tell you a bit more about that. The one area that we just sort of put our toe in the water on is the employment issue, and that's where this set of seven bills and the two that passed on the floor today, you've heard one more, and there was one heard in the Business and Labor Committee, I believe it was, last week. These are all bills that we took a look at what was being done nationally, and they've come from other states, Illinois, Tennessee, Washington, where they've been doing work around the same issue. I believe this bill on the state tax credit is actually an idea that came out of Illinois. When we testified last week in the committee, Jeff Wood, who couldn't be here today, that is our community corrections director, mentioned that there are about 4,400 people under supervision in Marion County right now, and 60% of them are currently unemployed. So we're looking for tools in the toolbox to encourage employers to employ people who have criminal records rather than just automatically screening them out and having them not even get a chance. And we don't see the tax credit as being the total solution for that, but we see it as being a tool to be able to help us work with employers and have them take a chance on someone who has a criminal record. There is a federal tax credit, and from the research that we could do on that, it is somewhat widely used with the TANF population, but not very widely used with this population at all. And so in the course of having this conversation, one of the things that we might want to look at, that this body might want to look at, is whether there is a way to actually connect up that tax credit with this population in Oregon. Our sense was that the Employment Department and the Department of Human Services, the those folks at DHS kind of get their folks ready, because you have to be certified to be able to be, for your employer to be eligible for the tax credit, you have to have the paperwork filled out when you come and get the job. You can't sign up after you get the job. And I think the communication stream isn't quite as good in terms of the community corrections and Department of Corrections. The silos are kind of too separate for that to have been used quite as much. But there, the Employment Department had some other concerns about that tax credit. So this would be a $600 tax credit maximum on top of the federal tax credit if that is being used. So I think I will stop my testimony there and just ask that you pass this bill. I believe it has a subsequent referral to the Revenue Committee. And I would be open to any questions.
Okay, thank you. Please go ahead.
My name is Kimberly Elaine. I'm the Executive Director for St. Vincent de Paul Society with the Mid-Willamette Valley. Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you for allowing us to testify this afternoon. As Commissioner Carlson expressed, the work that we're doing in Marion County is really an initiative to help people be successful in the community and to foster public safety for all. The bill that's before you was part of a conversation with employers in our community and community partners around ways that we can engage employers in the business community as well as agencies and organizations on how to assist folks in being successful and mitigate the risk and incentivize employers to participate with working with people that have a criminal history. Recognizing that this is a population that is difficult for us to put on a level playing field coming out the gate. We need to find ways to have conversations with employers and to assist them in looking at this employee pool, because that's what this is. These are community members back in our community that employment is critical for their success, for their family success, and to break the cycle of criminality, that generational cycle that Commissioner Carlson talked about. At the Center for Family Success, we work intensely with folks that have criminal histories around gearing them up on employment, soft skills development, parenting, other pro-social positive attitudes. My favorite is no whining in the workplace. As an employer, that's really a positive attribute. And so part of what we're doing is gearing people up to compete in the workplace. And the success of parents when they land a job on their own merit. In other words, they applied, they interviewed, they competed, and they answered the tough questions about their criminal history in an honest and an appropriate manner and was in dialogue with an employer. The purpose of this bill is to provide opportunities for folks, for employers particularly, to look at this employee pool. Families are not going to be successful with criminal histories if we don't open the gate a little bit for employers to take a second look at this pool of potential employees in our community. It is a public safety issue. It is a community engagement and a community health and wellness issue. We cannot keep going back to the practices of constantly incarcerating without preparing our folks for coming out back into our communities and also preparing our community to welcome folks back. It's a marriage of relationship. You know, the Department of Corrections, Community Corrections, agencies such as St. Vincent de Paul, community members and businesses must work together, preparing folks prior to release and also preparing the community for when they come back. That's the marriage of this this initiative. That's why these packages of bills are before you. And I thank you very much for allowing us to testify, and if you have any questions, be happy to answer those.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Rogers.
Thanks. Let me just drop off So for the record, my name is David Rogers. I'm the Executive Director of Partnership for Safety and Justice, a statewide advocacy organization that works to promote policies that strengthen our approach to public safety in Oregon to make it more effective and also more just. I appreciate the ability to testify, Chair Barker and members of the committee. We look at reentry as a very important public safety issue. We recognize that over 95% of everyone who is in our state prison system will return to the community at some point. And if those people are not prepared to succeed when they get out, the cost of their failure is actually incredibly high, both in terms of the human toll, but also in terms of the cost of reincarceration. And so breaking down the barriers that people experience, the reentry barriers, is an incredibly important public safety issue, and also actually allows us to save money in the long run, because the cost of recidivism, just from a dollars and cents perspective, is really high. And very clearly, employment is one of the key factors in determining whether or not people will succeed when they return to the community. And so providing an incentive to increase employment opportunities for this segment of the population is a really important strategy. And we're here to testify in support of House Bill 2803 with a few caveats. We want to definitely, first of all, just express that employment barriers for people with conviction histories they're very, very real. There are a number of statutory barriers which reduce the number of employment opportunities based on specific professions. There are licensing bars and barriers that prevent people from working in specific occupations. There's stigma, there's bias. There was a Los Angeles survey that found over 60% of employers would probably not or definitely not hire an individual with a criminal record. And then oftentimes, people who have been incarcerated have either faced low levels of education or actually work history to show that they're a viable candidate for employment. And that really stems from the fact that we still have a meager level of educational and workforce training programs within our state prison system, which needs to be addressed at some point if we're really going to break these barriers down. And it's also worth mentioning that conviction history is not always a relevant question around whether or not someone's going to be a good employee. So unlawful possession of a firearm is not related to whether or not someone's going to be a good factory worker. A drug possession charge is not related to whether or not someone will be a good administrative assistant. A prostitution charge is not relevant to whether or not someone will be a good restaurant staffer. But yet, oftentimes people are looking at conviction history without using a critical lens. And this is exacerbated because access to criminal records has dramatically increased with use of the internet. So there are, for now, just a few dollars employers can download from the internet someone's criminal records. And it's worth noting that big businesses, there's really big business in actually providing these records, and the records that people have access to are oftentimes riddled with errors, which in itself is a problem. We think that the idea of providing incentives to businesses to get past some of the reservations to hire people who are really earnestly trying to turn their lives around and would be good employers is a fantastic idea, and the policy of providing a state tax credit to do so, we really want to support with actually a couple of caveats. Our organization has a history of working closely with organizations that work to provide employment assistance to people when coming out of state prison. And anecdotally, there are a number of service providers that provide that employment assistance that recognize that some businesses have less than sincere motives in terms of seeking the tax credit, because there is a federal tax credit available. It's, as was mentioned earlier, it's through the Work Opportunity Tax Credit. And so we think that this would be a stronger proposed policy if it was designed to protect against businesses that were simply going to hire someone with a felony conviction, but only for a fleeting moment, in order to get the tax break. And there are two changes that could be done, that could be implemented, that would help address that problem. One is, first of all, to create a minimum amount of time that a released person would have to be employed. The current federal tax credit, the Work Opportunity Tax Credit, which is a federal program that provides tax incentives to help a range of people who experience employment barriers get back to work. That WOTC includes incentives, and it requires a minimum of 120 to 400 hours be worked before businesses actually available to cash in on that tax credit. And then, and we think that by doing so, that provides a window of time where someone has the ability to be employed, to prove themselves, and to work past the possible suspicion, stigma, and or insincere motivations. And we think that creating that window is really critical. The second change that we think would strengthen this would be to make the tax credit available for 2 years rather than one, and to have it be significantly increased for the second year. By doing so, that provides an incentive for long-term employment, and really, that's the goal here. I mean, in order for this to be useful, we need to make sure that folks ideally have living wage jobs, but also long-term jobs. Three to 4 months isn't necessarily going to get it done if we're thinking about helping them successfully reintegrate into the community for the long haul. So I'll leave it at that, just to say that we support the concept behind this, providing incentives to businesses to employ people who can be good employees, but are battling the barrier of having a felony conviction. Would be this is a good policy, and making those two changes would significantly strengthen it. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, and we're not going to work the bill today. We're just having the hearing, looking at some amendments that also cover some of our veterans that are returning from the war zone that need jobs. And unfortunately, as everybody who has seen the news in the last couple of months knows, the economy's in such terrible shape. This is going to be a very difficult period. And that's part of the reason Representative Cameron's working so hard to help people get back on their feet. It's going to be very tough in the future. So thank you very much for your testimony, Representative.
Yeah, Mr. Rogers hit upon one of the, I thought was a glaring issue out of this, which is the issue, no prescribed minimum period of time within which somebody has to be employed for the employer to take that tax credit. So I hope if when we go back to do amendments on this that we address that issue, because the way it reads right now, it talks about a 12-month period following the hiring date, but then turns around and says you don't have to have the person hired for a 12-month period, and that's exactly I can just see this turning into sort of a revolving door kind of scheme just for somebody who doesn't have good intentions to get their credit.
We'll be sure to address that. Thank you. Okay, thank you very much, panel.
Thank you.
Close the public hearing on House Bill 2803. Open a hearing on House Bill 2727, and Representative Escobar and Representative Thatcher, please.
House Bill 2727 prevents the release of information identifying the holder or applicant for a concealed handgun license. It authorizes disclosure pursuant to court orders or for criminal justice purposes. We have a -1 amendment. Without the amendment, we are ready to work the bill. It has a minimal expenditure impact and a minimal revenue on the original bill.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Chair Barker, members of the committee. I'm Kim Thatcher. I represent Kaiser, St. Paul, and Newburgh. And really, House Bill 2727 is a pretty simple bill. It says that information related to the holder or applicant for a concealed handgun license in Oregon may not be disclosed to the public. The only exceptions would be for law enforcement or for purposes under court order. There is a minor amendment that I'll talk to a little bit later that might be a technical fix in relation to the bills that may come out of this committee. Just for your information, at last count, there were 109,000 or so concealed handgun licenses currently issued to Oregonians. And if you're like me, many of you on the committee have heard from your constituents about how important this bill is to many of them. Just this week, I've received probably over 100 emails about this legislation, and every one of them, except one, is in total support. Here's one example of an email I got last night from a constituent in Kaiser. He's a retired Oregon State Police Detective Sergeant. He said, "I believe it would be a huge mistake to advertise who is carrying a concealed weapons permit. Imagine criminals being able to look up which business owners carry or don't carry a concealed weapon. This could make those that don't carry a larger target." That's just one of the many aspects or reasons that people want to support this. You know, to me, releasing the private information about concealed handgun owners defeats the whole purpose of the concealed part. Not only is this a privacy issue, I believe it's also a public safety issue, as my constituent pointed out so aptly. Many people get these permits because they are concerned about their own personal privacy and personal safety. They may have been victims of rape or victims of a stalker, many other individuals that mean harm. In fact, I'm more concerned about revealing their information to the gun owners out there who don't seek a concealed weapons permit, who actually conceal their weapons. They're all otherwise called bad guys. They're the criminals out there. And CHL holders have to go undergo an extensive background check, and it's one of the toughest in the country. They've been trained in gun safety and in the law, and these are extraordinarily law-abiding citizens we are talking about, not the common criminal. And to those who say this information should be public, I would ask them, why? How is it in the public interest that this information be revealed? I believe exposing this information would do more to hurt overall public safety in our state. In fact, I understand the Oregon Newspaper Publishers Association has decided not to oppose this legislation. Right now, there are 46 sponsors and co-sponsors on the bill, and several more legislators are looking to sign on after we drop the bill and it gets to the Senate side. This legislation was introduced at the request of the association representing sheriffs across the country, some of whom are sitting behind me, and they will come up here and tell you what they've been through this past year to respond to the concerns raised by these license holders. The sheriffs can only do so much to provide peace of mind, and clearly a new state law is needed in this regard. And just in case you're interested, we did talk to the NCSL folks, National, is it Council of State Legislators, and they told us that 10 states currently release concealed handgun permit information. 17 states expressly do not. Several more are considering legislation similar to House Bill 2727. And just a brief note on the amendment, just in case House Bill 2644 or 2991 pass, this amendment would allow licensed gun dealers and private parties to be able to contact state police to see if the person holding a concealed handgun license still has a valid license. We can talk more about these amendments as they come up if you'd like, and I'm open for questions from the committee, and I'm sure that any technical questions can be well addressed by folks behind me. And thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. And Representative Thatcher, we're not going to move the amendments today because we have more work to do on the other bill, so we'll probably work this bill as is today.
Yeah.
If we work it. Representative Escobar, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Colleagues, this bill is something that I think one would say originated in Jackson County. The local newspaper wanted a list from our sheriff, and our sheriff adamantly refused to relinquish that list. And I believe there is some litigation that is, I don't know if they pursued it or if they dropped it, but it's very interesting that that same local paper, I believe, came out with an editorial that didn't think this was such a bad idea after all. But I think the question we as legislators need to ask ourselves, what good does it do to have this public? That's the big question. Why would we do that? For what purpose? So a newspaper can have it? I don't think so. So I come from it on a different approach, that it serves no purpose to have it as a public record. Some people say, well, it is a public record because your sheriff's department handled it. I disagree with that. I don't think that if I or one of us here has a concealed handgun license, that the rest of the state of Oregon needs to know that. So I'll just leave it at that. And the question is, why? And what good does it do?
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, State Representative Brad Witt from House District 31, appearing here this afternoon in support of House Bill 2727. A good number of years ago, we decided as public policy in the state of Oregon that we were no longer going to allow individual citizens to obtain personal information from vehicular license plate numbers. That was decided on the basis that this information, were it to be obtained, was really being used in most instances for harassment purposes. And Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am very concerned that making information available on folks who are concealed handgun license holders would be used for similar purposes. So in terms of consistency between those issues and consistency on what information is and is not available to the general public, I urge your favorable action on House Bill 2727. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for three? Representative Garrett.
Technical question. Would this affect a government entity's ability to share information with another government entity? It seems like the purpose is to stop disclosure to the public, and I can understand that and agree with that. But there might be situations where we would want government agencies to be able to communicate, and I'm wondering if that is covered by this. Is that where what your intention is?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Garrett, similar again to vehicular license plate numbers, I think there is all good reason to make it to that kind of information available to law enforcement agencies. And again, arguing from the purposes of consistency, I think that it is appropriately and should be available to law enforcement.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Just in the bill, it says it allows disclosure if necessary for criminal justice purposes, or if a court enters an order in a pending civil or criminal case directing the public body to disclose the records or information.
Right, Mr. Chair, follow up.
Yes,
and I see that. It was just a technical question about whether that language, criminal justice purposes, would be, that would permit an exchange of information between agencies that maybe not in a criminal case, but maybe for some other legitimate government purpose. I'm just putting the question out there. I think it might need to be addressed, but that's all.
Thank you very much. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I'm a co-sponsor of this bill and like it. The question I have, or the thing I would say to the record with response to Representative Esquivel's good point of why would we have this, the only other thing I'd want us to explore that was brought to my attention afterwards, or it occurred to me afterwards, and didn't change my support of the bill, but what about an employer who has, an employee, they see a bulge in the, a bulge in the back, should we have a list of people who don't have a gun permit? I don't know, and do we care about that? Is there anything we should think about that? That doesn't change my support of the bill, but to the extent you can, ease any concerns that might be out there, might be mildly helpful.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, I want to clarify if I've misled you in any way. My question was, us as legislators, why would we allow the public to have this?
Yeah.
That was the question.
Yeah, I hear that.
Your question is very legitimate in the aspect that it's up to the individual employer whether you allow that on your premises or not. It's nothing to do with law. It's an employment agreement. So I think that not allowing the public knowledge is good. I don't think allowing knowledge like this out to the public is good for the individual. But as for the employer, and we've just run into a situation in a college that's going to take a little while to get to the bottom of that one, And reason being is, did the individual sign something before they became a student saying, hey, I will not do this, or did someone just not adhere to the law? So it's just a protection process for me as an individual, for you as an individual, for everyone in this room, if that's what, of course, you decide upon in your life.
Thanks very much.
Mr. Chair and Representative Smith, I would like to add that regulation of who carries and who doesn't carry in public places lies solely with the legislature. So this would apply to private employers, I assume he is talking about.
Yep. Thanks.
Hey, thank you very much. Next, if I have the sheriffs come up, please. You can go in any order. Just identify yourself for the record, please.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Barker and representatives. We appreciate the time to talk to you today. The three of us, Sheriff Winters from Jackson County, myself from Washington County, and Sheriff Skipper from Multnomah County, are representing the 36 elected sheriffs of the state. And secondarily, about the 110,000 people that hold concealed licenses. I'll try to be brief on this, but the background of this bill, how it came to the attention of the sheriffs, it did start in Jackson County with that circuit court ruling, and the judge, and my understanding of that case, said, listen, there's a potential that information could be private if you, sheriff, could show individually that the person had requested privacy and or that they had applied for the handgun license for personal security reasons. As a result of that case, the sheriffs met in December of last year. 30 of the 36 sheriffs were present and unanimously agreed that we would ask that question to the folks that held those concealed licenses. We did that in different ways. I sent letters to everybody and used the internet. Some people put the question to the local media if they couldn't afford to send those letters, but over 30 of the offices sent that question to the people that actually held the licenses. And the response has been overwhelmingly nearly 100% that the concealed handgun license holders have said, we applied for this this license largely for personal security reasons, and Sheriff, we'd like you to hold that confidential. In Washington County, I have over 10,000 holders. Two people responded that, yeah, it's okay if we release their information. The rest of the folks responded back, said, don't do that. We had about 1,000 people that didn't respond at all, so those are the numbers coming out of Washington County. About 99.5% of the folks statewide were a little higher. Same result, same answer to that. Overwhelmingly, the response has been to the sheriffs that they would appreciate our support in keeping that information private. I think the only other opening comment I would have is I totally agree that with the representatives that were here earlier, that this is a very law-abiding group of folks. These are the people that look at the rules on how to carry a handgun legally, and they follow them. And our experience with that group of people has been that we don't have any problems with that group of folks. We're not concerned that they're the ones out committing crimes. Very low rate of crime committal in this group. So good citizens, they follow the rules, and they're just asking for privacy. And we sure appreciate your consideration in that. Thank you.
Thank you, Sheriff.
Chair Barker and members of the committee. Bob Skipper, Multnomah County. I worked on the original gun bill. At the time, Sheriff Peirce, I think, had issued maybe a dozen permits in the entire Multnomah County. Today, we have about 13,000 and about 300 a month come in. I would point out the harassment issue that was brought up earlier. I would point out the ID theft potential. You get that kind of information on people. We all fight the ID theft thing. And just knowing that there's a gun in the house, if a burglar chooses to go to a house and wants a gun, he has a place to go. But I thought I would just read about three of the responses I got, if bear with me. I am employed as a Multnomah County Deputy District Attorney. I have taken numerous steps to protect my home address. I prosecute major felonies and believe release of my address will create a danger to myself and to my family. I was a witness for the state of Oregon in an attempted murder case. The concealed handgun license is an emotional public issue akin to abortion. Gun ownership alone is another controversy. Concealed handgun just escalated the issue and thus puts me at risk of being retaliated against, also my career in a financial advisor's position also. I wanted to add one more thing to what Sheriff Gordon said, and that is that we also have these people trained in the use of firearms, and that is just another important element, I think, in the fact that they are law-abiding people. They come in, they want to do it the proper way, and they are willing to take the training in order to do that. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Sheriff Skipper.
Mr. Chair, Mike Winters, Jackson County Sheriff, Medford, Oregon. Members of the committee, I won't go into too much detail, as you know, on how this case started, but some of the issues that when I refused to give this list up, the concerns are privacy, the concerns are keeping the not having the list sit on a reporter's desk that accidentally gets put in the trash and then it makes it out to the public. The Mail Tribune went through numerous attempts. At first they wanted the list, which would have meant names, addresses, social security numbers, dates of birth, and then it got redacted and this has gone, they wanted a smaller list. Then they wanted to get down to just the names, for example, and we've refused to give that. The case status is that this currently sits in the Oregon Court of Appeals, and I hope that there may be something that's retroactive to protect the 6,500 folks that hold concealed handgun licenses in Jackson County. I, too, sent out letters. Those letters were returned, about 5,000, a little over 5,000, all not wanting their information released. I also received hundreds of emails from across the United States, and they were all positive. Don't release the information. I've only had one person who was the an officer within a militia that said, release the information and let us keep an eye on them. I'm not sure that I agree with his way of thinking. Once you release that, any portion of this, and you can't unring the bell. I mean, the information's out there. If we don't take this on and get this stopped and get this legislation passed, we're going to be opening Pandora's box, so to speak. And then what do we go back to? The open carry? Because that's legal in Oregon. So do we want to see everyone who has, with handguns strapped to their hip, they legally can do it. Do we want to do that, or do we just want to stay in the concealed carry and pull it out of public records? I think the intent, maybe when it was first put in there, of it being in public records, public meaning that the sheriff's office holds it, that we send it out to the state police for background. It's public in that way. I don't think anyone who got a concealed handgun license believes that public means that we're going to post it on the wall of the courthouse, advertise it in the paper or something like that. So, thank you.
Any questions for the panel? Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is anyone going to be testifying in opposition to this? Do we know? Okay. All right. I'm just wondering what the rationale was, because I didn't pay much attention to the news story about why the Mail Tribune wanted it. Perhaps Sheriff Winters, if you could explain that.
The Mail Tribune that originally had wanted it started. The case started with a teacher who had a restraining order against her husband and wanted to carry a gun at school. Then they came in to ask questions about her. But again, that's one of the things. If you give it to one and open that Pandora's box, where do you stop it? So we refused to give up that information. That during some negotiations, one thing that we did do is I told them that I would
get the, go personally pay for going through the records, get the number of teachers, because that's what they ultimately said they wanted, the number of teachers in Jackson County that held concealed handgun licenses. And that's what their basics of their story were going to be about. They wanted to, they had the list of teachers, and they wanted to compare the two lists and come up with the total number of teachers in Jackson County that held concealed handgun licenses. At one point, I offered to go through with our staff time, and these records aren't computerized at this time, go through 6,500 individual files and give them the number of teachers. But to date, that isn't good enough. They still want the list. That's why we're in the Oregon Court of Appeals. And I hope the committee can find some way to retroactively protect the 6,500 people. Because I could see where if this legislation was passed and there was no way to retro it, that I would have to come up with at least these 6,500 names.
Chair Barker, one comment, if I could. Some people might see this as a conflict between media and the sheriffs. And most of us really... The sheriffs don't see it that way at all. It's the media is one party who may be interested in this information, but it's much more common to get a request from a vendor, somebody who wants to sell membership or a product, or a political party representing one political idea or another. And overwhelmingly, again, the folks say, I don't care who's asking for it. This is a very private issue for me and my family. So... when Sheriff Winter says if we give it to one, we need to share it with all, that's true. And the other people, not the media, but the other folks are at least as much a concern and probably more so to most of the sheriffs.
And if I could just echo, even if it's a National Rifle Association, that same thing. It's not public information. We don't give it out.
And I would have to say I think most citizens who are applying for those don't expect their sheriff to be selling their name, a list of names to everybody out there, and like you say, if you have to give it to one, you'd have to give it to everybody.
Exactly.
And I'd also just a reminder that while something happens and I'll think, well, the public thinks this or the public thinks that, I'm elected to a small area. You are sheriffs that are elected in your counties, and you heard pretty strongly from the people in your counties, I think, pretty overwhelmingly.
Yes, sir.
Any
yes.
Other comments to this group? Representative Krieger.
Be nice, Sheriff Winters, if you could tell the newspaper there were 6,499 teachers had concealed handgun permits.
It would be nice if I could say that.
Okay. Any further questions? Thank you very much. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
Taking your time to come down today. Okay, so... Yeah. Ted Boatsman, Gene Linz, and Sandra Morrison, please, for the next panel. You come on. Oh, I'm sorry.
I
forgot
that
it wasn't on. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Okay, so are you Ted?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and then so Gene Linz. And Ron Harder, please. There. Yeah. She's a written testimony.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Please go ahead and start in any order. Just identify yourself for the record before you speak.
I'm Ted Boatsman. I live in Kaiser. I really only represent myself. I don't know if I should identify myself as a concealed carry permit or holder or not. I am. And I am a little concerned about this. I do go to great extremes to protect my identity on the Internet, and I feel like any violations of visas and all those numbers scares me. So I do a lot of work to protect myself and on the Internet, and I feel like this is the same method that I went to a lot of effort to get a concealed carry permit. I've done the background checks. I've lived in other states. I've done it in those states also. Fingerprint, FBI, followed all the rules, did everything I could to do it right. I believe that I am a very conscientious citizen. At least I hope I am. If I'm stopped by a policeman, I very quickly identify myself and let them know that I have their permit. So I do everything that's right. And so I feel like if this is released, It's a form of identity theft that's just been released to the public. It also identifies me for anybody who wants to get a gun at a cheap price, like free. They just wait till I leave, follow the list, and go into my house and see if they can find it. So I think this, in my opinion, is very punitive, and it bothered me an awful lot.
Thank you.
My name is Gene Lenz. I'm a citizen of Kaiser also. Also see a concealed handgun license holder. I agree with the sheriffs that there is no reason to reveal that information to the public. I do. I agree with this gentleman also that it's a form of identity theft. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. Mr. Harder.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Rod Harder. I'm the Oregon consultant for the National Rifle Association. We're here today to support House Bill 2727. As some people have testified already, this could be a shopping list for either very smart burglars or very stupid ones, and dependent on, and of course we know all criminals are smart, so. And advertising individuals that do hold these licenses is not a good idea. You'll hear a lot of that from other people, but I do have a couple of things to add here, something that hasn't been said, and that's thank you to the sheriffs. We really appreciate them standing up for us, and I worked with Sheriff Skipper on this original bill, and we both had different color hair then. And well, one of the things that, and he's changed his attitude, I guess we all mellow in time. One of the things that we need to address, I think, and Representative Garrett had a good point, is there may be some other reasons to release this information. And we talked about reciprocity. If Oregon does extend reciprocity to other states, that means they will open up their reciprocity to us. Could very well be, and I have a license to carry in 32 states. I don't mind saying that because everybody already knows it. It's been in 7 papers and all my testimony. But I could well be in another state and something happened, and I would like the law enforcement people there to be able to check and see if my license is valid. We also, if we pass this purchase with the CHL, we're going to have to address how to do that, and I think there's amendment there already for doing that. Aside from that, I'll just let everyone else have their say. I think you're going to hear a lot of testimony that's pretty individual and personal. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And I'll just say I knew the young Sergeant Skipper when I was young Trooper Barker many years ago as well. When I had more hair and his hair was dark. Kevin Sterrett, Don Noble, and Greg Warnock. Is Don Noble here as well? Okay, he may be coming from another room. Please go ahead.
Members of the committee, for the record, Kevin Starrett, Oregon Firearms Federation. I want to thank both the sponsors and the sheriffs for support of this bill. A number of things that I think you need to know. All the correspondence I've gotten from people, they had always assumed that when they got a concealed handgun license, it was private information. They had no idea. They were quite shocked to find out. And there's a few things that I think need to be considered. One of them is this lists have already been used by some organizations who got them from the sheriffs. I know in my county, the sheriff divulged the names to an organization that then sent out fundraising letters. And my household got two to people who have no connection to the gun lobby, don't get gun magazines, nothing. They're clearly from the CHL records. And so there is that issue with that. There's another issue that I think you need to know about. What started all this was the Medford Mail Tribune's demands to get the names of teachers in their county. Now, what their plans were is a little in dispute. They claim they weren't going to use the names. Quite frankly, I don't trust them. As you know, a teacher in Medford approached us and asked us for help because it turns out her principal discovered not that she had a gun, but that she had a license. And by finding out she had a license and dragged her into his office with a police officer, closed the blinds, and threatened her. and told her, if you ever come here with a gun, you'll be arrested, which, of course, he didn't have the authority to do. You'll lose your job. Now, what happens in businesses where, as Mr. Harder pointed out, everybody in this state knows what I do for a living. They assume I carry a gun. But what happens if a person's in a business that is typically not friendly to gun ownership? Education is one of those things, but I could say probably the fashion business, apparel, maybe theater. Those people would then be definitely subject to some harassment and potential loss of their occupation because people who work with them are opposed to them having firearms licenses or firearms. The other thing, of course, is that what if you had people who oppose this bill have complained about battered women who then wouldn't be able to find out if their husband or ex-husband or boyfriend had a handgun license. But people don't get hurt with handgun licenses, they get hurt with handguns. And the real danger here is to the spouse, the battered spouse herself, who maybe has moved away from the batterer, and now not only does this batterer know whether or not she's prepared to protect herself, but has access to her new address. So I think that is a very, very big danger there. Ultimately, though, the concern is that when the Medford Mail Tribune wanted the names of teachers, probably to reveal those names, the sheriff there wisely said no. Obviously, he's in a court battle over that now. But everybody else has gotten, most of the other sheriffs have all gotten on board and support it. And as you've said, yourself, as others have said, what possible benefit is there to revealing those names? And since you've mentioned that you're not going to deal with the amendments unless some other bill happens, I think that it's important to recognize how easy it would be for these records to be used to harass or threaten people.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Stewart. Mr. Warnock.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, my name is Greg Warnock, Oregon War Veterans Association. I also wish to thank the sponsors and sheriffs for supporting this bill. Oregon War Veterans Association is the largest fastest growing veterans organization in Oregon, with over 400 new members last year, and we're anticipating another 1,000 members this year. Several of our directors hold CHLs. Many of our members hold CHLs, and we wholeheartedly and passionately support this legislation, and thank you for your support.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel? Thank you very much. Tara Callahan, Luis. And I'm sorry. Yes. And Michael Hickman, please. And again, just go ahead and in the order, just identify yourself for the record.
Okay. All right. My name is Tara Callahan, and I am in support of House Bill 2727. This is private information, and the government has the duty to protect the individual. It is no one's business to know who has a concealed handgun license. These are law-abiding citizens, otherwise they would not have the license. There is no reason to want this information public unless one has designs on using this information against those with the license. Don't punish those who are taking responsibility for their own safety, and don't let people's irrational fear influence your decision. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Luis Martinez. I live in Salem, Marin County, Oregon. I have not had time to prepare a written statement, but just some observations. I took the time to download the case in question, the opinion of Judge Philip Arnold, in the case of Mail Tribune versus Michael Winters. There's four issues that really come up with this case or this matter, and that is really the issue of right to privacy. But you also have the issue of ID theft, the burden on the sheriff's departments in producing or hiring staff to address any responses to these requests. But I want to touch on the case in specifically regarding Ms. Katz in Medford. In that case, and it's what's most notable is really the footnote in the judge's opinion. Originally, the Tribune asked for a list of names, but they then followed up and asked for the specific information regarding the applicant in question. The judge determined that because the applicant had already publicly disclosed that she held a concealed handgun license, notwithstanding any other issues, she was no longer allowed to use the public disclosure laws to her benefit. Therefore, the application itself was legitimately disclosed or given to the newspaper. Now, the application consists of an individual's driver's license number, date of birth, employer, social security number, their present street and address, as well as that list of addresses for the last 3 years, and in addition to that, two character references, in addition to answering some questions. So the concern here I have for an individual who's seeking a handgun license for many reasons, and in this case for a woman who is seeking protection from what she perceived was a legitimate threat, is not only is she now subject to an inquiry by the alleged abuser, so to speak, but now we have this information out in the public. And as the sheriff said earlier, it doesn't matter whether you disclose it to one person. Once you disclose it to one, you got to disclose it to everybody. And to press the to kind of hammer this case a little bit further, the three individuals that testified after the sheriff's all identify themselves as having concealed handguns licenses. They are now, because they made that public disclosure, sorry to say, under the laws that it states right now, they are now, their application can be reviewed or viewed by anybody. So I think ID theft is a real issue, not the only issue, but it's certainly something that we need to take into consideration when we look at this bill and the amendments that may follow. Thank you.
My name is Michael Hickman, and I live in Kaiser. Looks like Kaiser residents are in accord with this. I just want to make a quick statement that I believe that disclosing these names, especially in the economy crisis that we have right now where crime seems to be going up, is just going to give a list of targets for criminals to go get the guns that they cannot legally buy. I urge your support.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Representative Smith.
I just want to say for the record, I meant to say it in response to the last panel, but in response to Mr. Starrett's comment that handguns hurt people, I would just want to put on the record his acknowledgement that it's not that people don't hurt people, but handguns do, which I was surprised by. Appreciate that very much.
I didn't.
Everybody missed that, but I didn't.
You missed that? I
didn't.
He said permits.
He said handguns, permits don't hurt people, handguns hurt people.
Right.
And normally what we hear is that handguns don't hurt people, and now we know.
Okay. A little humor there, all right.
Very little.
Okay. Thank you.
I'll try again or not. The delayed joke is almost always a bad idea.
Yeah, that's right. If you have to explain it, it ain't working. Okay.
Should we talk about it further?
Carl, Matt Hay, and Matt Klein. Please. If you'd like to testify, you don't have to if you don't want to.
Well, my name, Manuel Martinez?
Yes. I thought last time. I'm sorry. Please, go ahead.
Given today the written signed testimony, and you probably all have.
And identify yourself on the microphone because this is important. Thank you.
But I'd like to say here that I am in favor of House Bill 2727.
This bill will
protect the permit concealed weapon carrier from disclose their name, address, and identification. Now, I don't see any benefits to disclose that information to nobody else. The sheriff only have the files and have all the information. An ID card is issued to the holder, so in case there is a question by a law enforcement officer, he can show that information that he is legal. So I don't see any reason why that any more information should be disclosed. I only see one beneficiary in this, though, is a criminal. Because the criminal can tell who will be an easy prey. You don't have a permit, probably you don't carry. You don't carry, easy prey. And if you carry a permit, the criminal can say, well, with this person, got to be a little more brutal. He couldn't retaliate, could carry it. I don't see any beneficiary other than there's something else that the Horizon bring to us that we are not aware of. Nowadays, there is a very, it's a new word, and it's not a new word, maybe for some, but not for me. It's like a magical word for many. Change. And change is a beautiful word, appealing. A problem with change is the bounce in any direction. Forward, backward, right, left. And we don't know how far can bounce. Now, let's change for a chance. And instead of protect and defend criminals, let's protect the concealed weapons permit holders. All of you is being elected to protect our rights. The Constitution, Second Amendment, and let's protect the law-abiding citizen. Let's pass this bill, 2727. And I also, you also been elected here to defend and to protect the Constitution of this magnificent country. And you have in a position right now, calling on me, to do that. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Please go ahead.
Representative Barker, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to appear before you on House Bill 2727. My name is Matt Klein. I'm currently in the civil process service business, and in such, I do on occasion have to travel to remote areas where, if I were to get in trouble, law enforcement assistance would be quite a while in coming. Prior to this, I worked in the corrections field in both Oregon and Washington, and I've also worked in the mental health field. In these fields, there are some, I have made some enemies, and I attempt to keep my information private so that if one of these people may try to seek me out, it's not going to be that easy for them. For that reason, I feel that my personal feeling is that a bill such as this is very important to assist those people in those types of fields from having their information become public. Another thing that was mentioned earlier that I would also like to emphasize is the fact that if this information is allowed to become public, it's like publishing a shopping list for criminals to know where to go to find weapons. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Yes, my name is Dr. Carl Mattai. I live here in Salem, and I'm very concerned about the bill that hopes to get passed. The sheriff's office has all the information about me and all those permit holders, and I gather that it doesn't go anywhere sooner to the license plate. Number two, privacy is a matter to me in general. Number three, and I'm not going to pull any punches here, I'm very concerned and very scared, and this is my opinion, of our national and world concerns. The direction our government is taking us. One world government, socialism, in which all countries to a certain extent will be equal, bringing us down closer to the third world. The way to do this is, number one, bankruptcy of the country, both financial and mentally. Spend. Gun control. That's the arms and the ammunitions, confiscation, deployment of our military forces to many areas away from America, 17,000 troops are getting ready to go to Afghanistan, reduce America's power, reduction in its nuclear power, open borders. I don't want the government involved in what I'm doing with guns. I saw the video during the catastrophe in New Orleans where they went and started confiscating the weapons. Consequently, I really am, like I say, scared that the first people that are going to go are those that have their openness to the permit system. So I highly recommend that this not be passed, and I hopefully that this won't happen. The things that I'm saying, there's just for the information, there's two very good books, Marching Towards Hell by Michael Schur. I suggest it's very good reading. It brings up where we are today. It's American and Islam after Iraq. The other one that you can see I've read quite frequently here is called Collapse, How Societies Choose to Fail or Succeed by Jared Diamond. Very interesting reading. I hope that the message I got across will give some people some insight in what's happening. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. And we passed a law in Oregon last session, if I'm not mistaken, that prohibits the confiscation of weapons during a Katrina-type incident, because we were aware of that happening down there. So
I beg your pardon,
We were aware of that happened in New Orleans, and we passed a law that would prevent the seizure of weapons from law-abiding citizens during a catastrophe like Katrina. In Oregon, you're protected in Oregon from that.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. I guess we'll do 1, 2, 3. Mr. Randall, Mr. Hoffmeister, and Tom Gallagher. Just identify yourself for the record. Anybody?
Chairman Barker, members of the committee. My name is John Hoffmeister, and I live in Salem, Oregon. I speak to you today from two perspectives. The first is that of a law enforcement officer who has just recently retired after a total of more than 31 years in the field, the last 28 years of which I spent at the Salem Police Department. During that time, as a police officer, I worked in a variety of capacities: uniform patrol, traffic enforcement as a motorcycle officer, undercover narcotics. I was on the SWAT team for over 16 years as an active operator. I was a field sergeant, and I retired as a lieutenant. And in my last position for nearly 5 years, I was in charge of the emergency operations group, which consisted of the department's SWAT team, bomb squad, hostage negotiators, riot squad. And I was also administratively in charge of the canine unit. During my entire career, I've had numerous opportunities where I have encountered people in the field with guns, both legally and illegally. And I'm here to tell you without a doubt that law-abiding citizens that comprise the group of concealed handgun licensees are not a problem to the state of Oregon or, in my mind, in the United States at all. They are a group of citizens that, if called upon, would come to the aid of police officers at the scene of incidents and, in fact, are the kind of responsible citizens that we need to have more of them stepping up, paying the fee, going through the process, and deciding that, yes, that's an added responsibility that I want to take on to make my community a safer place in which to live. Numerous times I had contact at a traffic stop type of situation, whether it was a speeding violation or running a red light or something minor. And one of the things that hasn't been mentioned is that a concealed handgun licensee is required upon contact with police to immediately say, I have a permit and my gun is located here, there, or wherever. Invariably, every time I came in contact with one of these individuals, first of all, they were always nervous, which most folks are in those kinds of contacts, but they were trying to get out the fact that they had a license and this is where the gun's located. And I tried to develop a dialogue with those folks to put them at ease. And so after a while, after having run into the complete dichotomy of these situations where we're running into bad guys that want to kill us, that don't have licenses and don't care about what our laws are, versus stopping somebody who is a responsible citizen, whether that be a judge, a banker, whatever the case may be, person that just wants it for personal security, that's just trying to do the right thing. What I determined was that these people are not enemies. These are our allies. These are people that I could rely on if I needed to at the scene of something, if they happened to be there, that would render me some assistance. So my dialogue consisted of, well, you're not carrying that gun to go out and commit a robbery, are you? Well, no, officer, I'm not. You're not carrying that gun to go kill anybody, are you? Of course not, officer. I wouldn't do anything like that. You're not going to kill me with that gun, are you? Which generally by that time, by the way I was talking, would start to elicit a little bit of a smile and a little chuckle and say, well, no, officer, of course not. I just have it because of this or that or whatever. And I said, well, you don't have anything to worry about for me because I'm considering you, as I just testified to you, as an ally and as a friend. And I am very thankful for you doing the things that you've done. Any concealed licensee, concealed handgun licensee in the state of Oregon. That information goes into the Oregon law enforcement data system. So when an officer makes contact with the person and runs their driver's license or just runs their name and date of birth to see what their driving status is, that's going to pop up on the return as well as the driver's license and any warrants that that person may have or if they're under any kind of supervision, whether it's parole or probation. So it's a piece of information that's out there for law enforcement to have if they need to have that. But again, this is not a group that is a concern to in law enforcement. And so to look at them as a group that needs to be watched or monitored, I agree that that needs to happen. I think that the checks and balances that our system has in place today is a very adequate one. Each sheriff is charged with the responsibility of accepting those applications, accepting the fingerprint card, turning that into the state police to have it checked through the system to make sure that that person is who they say they are, and then determining, does this person meet the criteria to be qualified to responsibly carry a gun in our society? And that comes with a letter from some sort of a firearms training business that certifies this person has had some training. The sheriff then decides yes or no. And if it's yes, then it goes into the system. It's renewed every, I believe, 4 years, might be six. I can't remember the terms of expiration, but that information is available, and it is monitored by the system that we all have entrusted to take care of those kinds of issues throughout the state, i.e. law enforcement. Now, the second perspective I want to speak to you on this issue from is that of a license holder. If I were in the position of a license holder and I was listening to the discussion that was going on about this, I would be wondering to myself, why would somebody want to know that I have a concealed weapons permit? And the logic that I heard, or I'm sorry, the explanation that I heard was that, well, it would just be nice for people to know if their neighbor has a concealed handgun permit. I submit to you, in the country that we live in at this day and age with the Second Amendment, that each and every one of us should consider each and every one of our neighbors as having a gun in their house. It's completely within everyone's right unless they have been convicted of a crime that precludes them from possessing that gun. And so logic in my mind would be that, well, maybe what we need to have is a list of people who shouldn't be having guns and have that published so everybody knows who it is, as opposed to the law-abiding citizens. So in closing, trying to look at it from the second perspective, that of a licensee, the only logical reason that I can see for someone wanting to have that information is to disseminate it, as has been mentioned by previous speakers, as some form of a tool to be used to harass people that are abiding by the law, to harass people that are trying to make our state a safer place to live in, and has no logical purpose and no reason by which it could come to anything other than continued harassment and intimidation of those licensee holders. So in closing, what I'd like to just remind all of us is that our job in government is to do no harm and to protect those that need to be protecting and to do the right thing. If you submit this to the familiar smell test, we have a couple of things that in our system are could be used as some analogies or comparison here to help us kind of put this in some sort of a context to help frame it. As a police officer, when I was an active police officer, I could submit a form signed by my supervisor or by any supervisor at the agency that said my home address on my driver's license and on all my registered vehicles can go to my law enforcement agency for protection of myself and my family so that criminals can't just go down to DMV and summarily say, hey, I need this gentleman's information because it was a hit-and-run crash or whatever the circumstances may be, and find out where I live. That's something that I think the government should be doing and should continue to do to protect people that are benefiting our society and making things better for all of us and safer for all of us. Flip side of that, who's a real threat to our society now that we have a list of or we have the ability to find out about where they live? Sex offenders. Sex offender registrations are required. They're required to update those every year on their birthday and every time they move. And that's for the benefit of all of us in society, whom those people may choose to prey on, or some of our family members. Now, let's go back to the concealed handgun licensees. Which group do you see those people belonging in? Those that are helping and benefiting, or those that are causing a problem? And again, as I relating back to my earlier testimony, after 31 years of law enforcement experience, I'm telling you, they're over here on this side of the equation. They are not a problem.
this is not the kind of action that needs to be conducted, or not the kind of list that needs to be given to the general public. So I would strongly urge you, from all those points and all those perspectives that I gave you, to not allow this to be become a document that is public information and that is released to the general public. Law enforcement has it if they need it and uses it when it's appropriate. Thank you very much for your time, and I appreciate it.
Thank you, and you had checked that you were opposed to the bill, so obviously you're on the other side of that. And
oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Yes, you're absolutely right, Chairman.
Okay.
I think I know where he's coming from.
Did I make myself clear?
I just want to call you up with that, with a different group.
Not speaking clear.
And if I could ask you to leave the panel, because we have one more person who's going to be speaking. And
thank
so
you
I'll also call Ms. Okamoto. Ms. Okamoto, please. And then go ahead, Mr. Gallagher. Or whoever, Mr. Randall.
Okay, hi. Good afternoon, Chairman Barker and committee members. My name is Judson Randall, and I'm the president of Open Oregon, which is a Freedom of Information Coalition. The green and blue booklets that you have.
Just a second. If whoever, thank you. Okay, phone's off.
Those booklets are, we publish those in collaboration with the Attorney General's office, to give public agencies, city councils, water districts, et cetera, and citizens a quick guide to these laws that affect the access of the public to their business. We're not in favor of wholesale release of the holders of concealed handgun licenses. In fact, we were rather chagrined some years ago when a guy got a CD of all the DMV records and was starting to think about selling it, or what are we going to do with it. I mean, that was not appropriate in our view. However, I read the law this morning, the concealed handgun license law this morning, and it's clear that there's a fairly high bar for people to get concealed handgun licenses, and a lot of safety provisions in there would protect people. What we do believe, though, is that this concept of not releasing these things should be placed in the open public records law under 192.501, which has a provision for conditional release if the public interest outweighs the public interest in confidentiality. There may come a time when an event occurs and it would be in the public interest for the public to know who had that license. I'm thinking of individuals. I'm thinking of the Virginia Tech shootings a year ago, that in a situation may occur in which it would be beneficial to the public to be able to find out this information on a particular individual, not everybody on Maple Street. We have no reason to distrust the sheriffs. They handle the responsibility of giving out these licenses and testing whether the applicant has met the criteria, and we think that's fine. But in some particular instance, one day, there may become a need to disclose this information. I thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Gallagher.
My name is Tom Gallagher, representing the Oregon Newspaper Publishers, and it's my third time on a public records bill in front of you. I want to make a couple things clear. That when OMPA testifies on public records bill, we're not talking about newspapers, just newspapers' right to access to information. That's whether or not we get information makes it easier to publish our papers and so forth. That's not the issue. We really do find it a matter of public policy to take a good hard look at public records bills and what exemptions are made to the public record law. There are over 20 public record law exemptions up this session that we're working on. And I'm not here on a gun control bill. I'm not here on the permit bill. I just want to talk about for a second about the public records and public records process here. When this case originally came up, a decision was made, this is not an exempt record, and it's not been exempt since 1973. So cases come up and people decided whether or not individual sheriffs and so forth, whether or not they should release these records. The proper process for exempting something from public records is to go through this process and to either exempt it in the empowering statute of that particular agency or operation, or it's to have an exemption under 192-501 or 192-502. So I'm glad that this bill is in front of you, because it would have been an argument over public records law if somebody made an individual decision to exempt something from the public record. So I think this is the right place to do that exemption. This is also not about protecting identity theft. There's a number of protections in the public record law. Identity theft is a serious issue, but the whole operation of public government records being disclosed and the presumption in favor of that is something we should take a serious look at. Having said that, the way you exempt something from public records is by this body making a decision that the public policy overrides the need for disclosure. And I'm assuming that you're going to do that in this case. And it's 31 votes. That's all it takes, and that's the right way to do this. We also would agree with Open Oregon that this probably should not go in Section 192.410. It should probably go in 192.501. And in 501 is where you have 34 exemptions already to the public record law, and you can include those 1 and 2 as to who has a right to this record, and you can put that inside of the public records law. Then they're all in one place, or basically all in one place. So that's our testimony on this particular issue. I am going to drop off some testimony from Managing Editor of the Oregonian, Bob Caldwell, who takes an individual point of view on this, but it's not the point of view of the OMPA.
Okay, thank you. Representative Garrett.
Tom, if we put it in 192.501, there's a language about may be disclosed if public interest requires it. Is that the only substantive difference between doing it there and doing it here, as written?
If you put it at, and you know, I have to look at the section you have it in here is
192.410,
and it's kind of an earlier section. It's not exactly the exemption section. So it's odd for me that the Legislative Council drafted it this way. The real difference is between 501 and 502. Yeah.
Right.
In 502, it's an absolute. The record is dead, gone, and buried. You can't get at it. In 501, there's a public interest test. Plexico Burris shoots himself in a leg. In New York City, did he shoot himself with his own concealed weapon handgun, or was he carrying that would make the release of that record probably easier for everybody to deal with. There's another provision where you can put it back in the operative statute of a particular agency or a particular entity, and then it's bootstrapped into 502 under provision sub 9 of 5012 that says it's exempt anywhere else in the statute, it's exempt here.
If I could clarify, 410 is simply definitions for the entire public records law. As I understand your bill, it would create a separate law outside of the public records law that basically prohibits the release of these records. What we're suggesting is put it in the public records law and allow a public interest test for disclosure.
Representative Staker.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, that raises, and maybe if we're going to work this as a place, I can raise it during the work session, but it's the placement of this causes me not only confusion but concern. It seems like we're creating a whole subclass. I have no problem with the concept, and I think it comes down to what Mr. Gallagher is saying. It's an issue, is it a conditional exemption or is it an outright exemption? And I would rather have the way this is drafted, it like I said, it looks like it sort of creates this whole separate class and a whole different position within the statute and doesn't even sort of come within the existing public records law. The other aspect of it, I guess, that I'd have either of you can comment. I mean, well, first of all, do you have a preference? I think you said your preference is for the conditional as versus the outright exemption. Mm-hmm. But
exactly,
it's both of your testimony that it should be in there under an exemption. That would be the preferable place to put it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Sigler, yes, I think 501 works. And don't forget that there are redactions to these records. I think one of the sheriffs talked about redacting these records, Social Security numbers and other things that will come out of these records under other exemption under the public records law. I don't know if this is what happened, but we're running into different drafters down in in legislative council who are opening this up. Dave Hendricks usually has done the drafting on this, and Greg Chamoff before him under the public records bill. So it, I think it's just a technical glitch as to where they put it.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah, follow up. I know we're... I guess the other concern I have is, as the way it's written, I want to make sure that these records are not, I mean, I understand that the CHL goes into the LEDs, but I want to make sure that there's no interpretation that this in any way, shape, or form is not information that's not available to appropriate agencies and entities such as law enforcement agencies. So that's my other concern with the way it's currently worded.
Mr. Chair, Representative Stigler, I actually think that it's fairly common with a bill like this for those agencies to come forward who need access to the records, and that's, I think that's important that usually in public records law, that in that section 192, that doesn't really prevent getting access to the general public, not those on a need-to-know basis.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Krieger. Personally, I prefer the outright exemption. The only place that we need to have this divulge is between police agencies. They've testified that they're already doing that, and no one's objecting. If we need to have a little amendment somewhere that specifically states that, then it does, both purposes are served.
Okay, thank you, panel.
Thank you very much.
It would be my desire to move this out as is today. If we need to adjust it, we can adjust it on the Senate side, but June 30th is approaching quickly. And I'm sorry.
Ms. Okamoto, I'd like to
Okay, please. I called. I'm sorry. I asked you to come up.
If I said, I'm Penny Okamoto, and I'm actually here on behalf of Ceasefire Oregon. A couple of good points, before I read my testimony, a couple of good points have been brought up today. And one of them has been about the teacher who is in a lawsuit right now about having a weapon in the classroom. And she has reason to have weapons. I understand her concern. But don't you think, though, that parents should have some idea of what teacher has a weapon? Shouldn't they have the right to know my child's teacher has a weapon, has a concealed carry weapon? I certainly would want to know that. Also, we can get around this pretty easily, this whole concept of having the information available or not. If you don't want your information publicly available, and I'm fine with just having names, you don't have to have a Social Security number. In fact, if I understand correctly, when you apply for a concealed handgun permit, you don't need to give your Social Security number necessarily. I believe the law reads that you can if you want to. But we can get around all this by simply not having a concealed handgun permit. If people don't want that information divulged, don't get a concealed carry permit. It's really that simple. Also, limited information can be given out. These don't need to be sold to people. And we don't need to give out phone numbers, Social Security numbers, things like that. That's not necessary. As my testimony, prohibiting public access to this information actually makes it less likely that the public will know whether concealed carry license holders are contributing to violence. There will be no way to compare their actions with those of the general public. And as a concealed weapon holder, as far as being protected, as far as the concealed weapon holder is concerned, they actually already have an ace hidden up their sleeve, almost literally, don't they? But they're concerned about their protection. They're already carrying a weapon. Allowing public access of this information at least sheds a sliver of light for a possible victim. Victims of domestic abuse or others concerned about threats made to them should have the opportunity to freely determine whether or not someone has a weapon. It is a fact that a few concealed handgun license holders do indeed commit crimes after receiving a concealed carry permit. A few of them do. And sadly, that's why we have laws, to protect us against the few who do bad things. Of course, not everyone does bad things, but we do need these laws to protect us against the few. I actually have a lot of reports here that I was going to use in another testimony, and I can share these with you now or So you can have them with attached to the other testimony for later. It's up to the committee. I know it's already 2:40.
We're just doing this bill right now.
Right, exactly. Okay, I'll keep that for another one. So this bill, HB 2727, is not about the right to bear arms, but the right of all Oregonians to know who is carrying concealed weapons. Concealed weapon holders already have protection. Let the citizens of Oregon have theirs by knowing who is carrying concealed weapons. Thank you.
How do we know who doesn't have a permit, who's carrying? The gangbangers in Portland who are shooting each other.
Wouldn't it be nice if we had registration?
No, it wouldn't.
Well, that's the only way we're going to know.
They don't obey the law now. Why would they register? That's the problem. And
we don't know who's registered to have a handgun. Some people want to register bikes and license bikes, we don't even do that for handguns, so how are we going to know? It's scant information anyway, I agree.
Yeah.
Very scant. Doesn't make it right.
But the issue here today is the people who do have concealed weapons want privacy, and you know there seems to be overwhelming support from what the sheriffs are telling us that they are asking for privacy when this came up. And as far as the police being around to protect you, I was a cop over 31 years, and I can tell you when seconds count, we're only minutes away. And you ask the women who have a restraining order, and the guy walks through that piece of paper like it is a piece of paper and kills them. Those women deserve to have the right to protect themselves. They may not need the CHL if they're in their home. They could have a gun there anyway without it.
But again, if you don't want information made public, don't get a concealed carry. It's really that simple.
Thank you.
And unfortunately, it really is that simple because there's no registration.
Well, it could be like some states which require Vermont, which requires no permit to carry, but then we'd have, I'm afraid, too many bad people carrying, which could confuse the issues.
We could definitely talk about may issue versus shall issue.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions? Any further
questions? Mr. Chair, I move 2727 to...
Close the public hearing. Thank you very much.
Okay. I can't speak for everybody and I certainly can't speak for the chief co-sponsors as a junior, minor, freshman co-sponsor of the bill. I'd have no problem. You know, you and I may disagree, Representative Krieger, but I'd have no problem with putting this in the public records portion of the law if that, you know, sort of seems sensible, makes it more reasonable. And my sense is we'd have, you know, at least 4 or 5 members of the committee who might prefer that. I heard your Chair Barker's interest in speed. I'm not sure if it makes us faster to have to go to the Senate, think we're going to change it there, and then have to come it back to the House. I think there's, you know, I would like to see this bill get done this session, and personally would just say I would have no problem wherever it goes, whether it's in the public record section or the other section, and know that there are a few members of the committee that might be comfortable if it's in the other place.
Okay, I'll close the public hearing on that, and we'll take a look at the amendment before we move it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair, before we go on, can I just make a comment?
Yes, you could.
I would just, I think it takes a lot of guts for somebody to come up here with a minority view when everybody in the room sees it a different way. And I just, you know, I heard a lot of verbal harumping back and forth in the back there, and I just hope that we will aspire to a higher level of discourse on this topic in the future.
Thank you, Representative Shields. I agree that we have a decorum in the room, and there are sometimes, though, at least from up on the dais, where we can't allow, or I feel in some case I can't allow statements to be made unchallenged when I think they're way off the map. But as I agree with you, that those need to be done respectfully in order. Thank you very much. Yeah, we're going to jump on down since we're running out of time. The work session on House Bill 2441. Open the work session.
House Bill 2441. Mr. Verbeck, back to the Corpus Delicti rule. This modified current law, which requires corroboration before a confession is admissible and creates an exception to sex crimes against vulnerable victims when a confession is deemed trustworthy. We adopted the dash ones back on February 26th. We now have a minimal fiscal expenditure on the dash ones as well as no revenue impact statement.
Chairman, ask a question of council.
Question of council, please.
It's my understanding that there's since been -4, 5s, and 6s, and I don't have those here. Have you heard anything about that, council?
We had -1s and -2s at the time we adopted the -1s, and there have been no further amendments that have been submitted to myself.
For, I've been approached by, I think, every party in this regarding some -5s and some -6s, which were at issue. -5 in particular, I think, the Department of Justice was promoting.
It, with all due respect, if I may interrupt you, I believe you're responding. You're
referring to
House
Bill
2344, yes, which has been moved to tomorrow.
Oh, my mistake.
Yeah.
Yes, you're right. You're absolutely right.
Is there any further discussion about this bill?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Actually, I know we're running out of time. I do have some further discussion. I recall, if I may.
You may.
I recall that this is a bill in which we adopted the -1 amendment last time with a minimum of discussion. And I recall I've been thinking about this a fair amount since then, and I know there is another bill that's in the Senate right now that would require that all confessions be recorded in all instances. I happen to think it extremely unlikely that that bill comes to us, and I'm concerned that if we're waiting for that bill to have a discussion about the merits of the -3 amendments, that we'll never have that time. And I think there is some merit to the -3. In fact, Mr. Chair, may I be heard on the -3?
Yeah.
Mandatory reporting.
Just a moment, please.
Of course.
Yes, go ahead, please.
So, Mr. Chair, regarding the other bill, I can't recall the number off the top of my head. I think it was heard earlier this week in the Senate for the first time. I would be strongly opposed to that. I think it is utterly unreasonable to require all admissible confessions to be recorded. I just don't think that's a reasonable public policy. That said, if there is one instance in this world in which requiring a confession to be recorded, if there is one instance in which that might be good public policy, it might be this very narrow exception to corpus delicti. It's when that confession is itself the sole basis of a guilty conviction. If there is one time in this world where we need a recorded, because it is truly the only evidence at issue, this might be it. And I think the -3 deserves our serious consideration.
Okay, the I heard part of the testimony in the other bill, and there was a lot of possibilities where, in fact, that was requiring confessions in person-to-person crimes.
Mm-hmm.
There was instances where somebody would be interrogating somebody over a property crime where they would suddenly disclose something and then it wouldn't be recorded and you'd have those kind of problems. And there needs to be, in order to have a recording provision, you need to have a lot of safeguards so that all these things, the unintended consequences we always talk about, don't occur. Without the recording, the recording would be better. Without the recording, the court or the jury would certainly take an extra hard look at any confession that came forward. And I think that would provide the protections needed here, and I'm certainly willing to look at the other bill when we, if that leaves the Senate. But
I understand. And also, I just gather, frankly, from both from your sense and perhaps the vibe I get, that there's no need in my pushing it. I don't think the -3 has the votes to pass today, so I'll let this be. I'm prepared to support the -1. I'd rather have the bill as amendment than none at all.
Okay, thank you very much. And it has already been amended. We have the -1s. We have a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move the committee pass House Bill 2441 with a -1 amendment to the floor of a due pass recommendation.
Representative Wisnett moves House Bill 2441 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Further discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Barton?
Aye.
Representative Cameron?
Aye.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Excused.
Representative Shields?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Stiglitz?
Aye.
Vice Chair Whitman?
Aye.
Chair Barker?
Aye. Motion carries. Would anybody like to carry that? I'd ask that Representative Gelser be carrying that bill. Thank you. Back on the agenda, we have House Bill 2644. We're going to cross that off because it is word for word the same as House Bill 2991, which is farther down the list. I'm going to open a public hearing. Let's see.
It's a GHB 65.
That's going to take forever. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2645, and we will not be working that bill today.
House Bill 45 requires the state police to destroy records obtained during criminal records checks within 24 hours of approval for qualified firearms purchases.
Mr. Harder, Mr. Sterrett, and Greg Warnock, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Rod Harder with the National Rifle Association. We're here today to support House Bill 2645. Understand that there are some concerns and will be some testimony from the state police on this subject, and I really can't address those because I don't know what they are. We do look at destruction of records as being a very necessary part of what we're talking about as far as searching for a word. I guess the confidentiality thing doesn't fit here, but when this bill originally, or when all these laws originally passed, going back 5 or 6 years, record keeping and was a big issue. It was a huge issue, and we fought tooth and nail for keeping records private when it came to gun ownership. Now, we do understand that in the case of denials, we don't care how long records are kept. There is an issue if someone is denied and then subsequently found able to purchase a firearm. Those records should be kept for a number of reasons. One, for the person who is doing it, so they won't have to go back to the records again. But beyond that, we think that record should be destroyed. There is no reason to keep those records once a person has been approved totally without any incidents. There really is no reason for that. We're keeping records of gun owners and not necessarily the guns. So without seeing what the state police have, that's about the best I can do for right now.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Sterrett, please.
The record, Kevin Sterrett, Oregon Firearms Federation. I'd like to stipulate to the committee that it's my position that people are hurt with guns for the benefit of Representative Smith, not with permits. Just wanted to clear that up. We support the bill. I believe the state police concern is that if they do a background check and there's a delay and they subsequently clear the purchaser, that they'd like to be able to retain those records so the person won't face a delay again. We think that an easy fix for that is to allow them to retain the information on the person, but just not keep records on guns that are purchased, as the federal system does now. When you buy a gun in another state where the feds are the point of contact, they check you as an individual, but they make no record of what you bought, serial, caliber, make, anything like that. Mr. Harder and I discussed earlier that perhaps the best thing to do would be to keep no records on people who sail through the background process, but if there's a problem with a person and the state police want to keep those records to grease the skids for a future purchase, that would be fine. I gave you all a handout about a student in Connecticut who made a speech at a college and suddenly found out that the police had a record of every firearm he owned. I can tell you the year after I left New York City, where all firearms were registered with the police, long guns and shotguns, those records were used to confiscate virtually every rifle and shotgun in the city that was capable of holding more than 5 rounds. Gun owners are concerned about records of what they have, as has been discussed earlier, what we saw happen in Katrina and other places. The records retention really serves no particular purpose except to create a large database which could potentially be misused and has been in other places. And that's why we support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Matt Volstead, Michael Hickman, and Brian DeLashmet. Okay. You're signed up on it, but that's okay. Please go ahead.
This, Chair Barker, members of the committee, my name is Matt Bolstad with PacWest, and I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Gun Owners Association, and we would like to register our support for House Bill 2645. A person who passes a criminal background check should not have their records kept on file with the Department of State Police beyond the time it takes to approve the purchase. Approved applicants have proven that they have clean records, which is the intention of the check in the first place. The model for this bill is the National Instant Criminal Background System, managed by the FBI, which destroys records within 24 hours. Furthermore, a record of firearm sales remains with the dealer in accordance with federal and state law. These records include the firearm purchaser's information and fingerprint, as well as the make and model of the purchased firearm. Should someone fail the criminal background check, this bill retains the 5-year record retention rule, recognizing that such a person is of interest to law enforcement. I respectfully request your support of House Bill 2645. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Ms. Okamoto.
Again, I'm Penny Okamoto, and I'm with Ceasefire Oregon. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to me. House Bill 2645 would require Oregon State Police to destroy records obtained during a criminal background check within 24 hours of approving the person for firearms purchase. Ceasefire Oregon opposes HB 2645 because it would deny the police access to essential information about crimes, about guns used in crimes, and it would therefore make Oregonians less safe. There's simply no good reason to pass this bill. You can note in the provision in the statute that's right below the proposed new 7B, what is currently 7B and would become 7C, states that these records are, quote, exempt from disclosure under public records law, end quote. So right now the public has no access to these records. Why would the state of Oregon want to cut off law enforcement's access to these records? The current statute permits the OSP to keep the records for 5 years. Access to this information enables law enforcement to compare a gun dealer's sales records with the information the dealer provided during background checks. That information is critical to identifying gun dealers who are knowingly selling guns to criminals using straw purchases. It's also used to trace guns used in crimes. And why would the state of Oregon want to prevent law enforcement from ferreting out criminal gun dealers and tracing crime guns? You don't see how Oregonians are better served by this bill. How are we made safer by hampering law enforcement in effort to retrieve firearms from prohibited persons who have mistakenly sold guns? How are we made safer by impeding law enforcement's efforts to stop guns being sold to criminals? This bill will only protect shady gun dealers and criminals. This is not a situation that requires a careful balancing of interests. The public's interest is clearly in permitting law enforcement to retain tools it now has to locate unlawful gun dealers and straw purchasers and to prevent criminals from getting guns. This is not the time to be taking away those tools. The bill sponsors will probably point out that since July 2004, the federal law has required, has required the FBI to destroy similar records within 24 hours. The fact that the NRA has successfully impeded law enforcement at the federal level, however, is no reason to allow it to impede the work of Oregon's law enforcement officers. Please do not support HB 2645. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions, Ms. Okamoto? Thank you very much.
No,
oh, wait.
No, okay. Not of. Okay. No. I just had general questions.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, we're not working this today, correct?
We're not working this.
Right. And I just have the issue brought up by counsel in her staff summary regarding definition of disqualification. I had the same concern. And hopefully we can address that.
I have one thing I want to say to the record. I can't, quoting my good friend Chair Barker on certain comments we can't let stand, I can't agree with you that there is no good reason for the bill. I think we might disagree about whether or not a person has a right to have a gun, but the Constitution says that they do. And so we can talk about what are the reasonable and rational limits to that right, but I think to say that, I think there's a fair argument that almost any measure to protect that right at least has a legitimate interest, even if we think that interest is overridden by other concerns. I, as again, as a junior co-sponsor, can't speak for any of the other people more senior to me. I think there might be amendments that sensibly differentiate between law-abiding carriers of firearms and non-law abiding, and that take care of the interests of law enforcement. But I do want us to be careful about our language as we deal with some of these sort of heated topics.
Thank you very much, Representative Smith. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2645. And, yeah, we'll have to move 2991 over since we're out of time today and people have to be at other meetings. No further. Yeah, we'll move 2991 over to Thursday. And no further business before the committee. Adjourn.